Original artists.
You have individuals that are have talent, that they're able to compose new music. And then it's become popular as of late that there are people, it's called a remix, right? And that's basically where you take other people's music, you twist it around a little bit, and then you sell it. So I'm more of a remix artist. So I'm going to share with you the tremendous thinking of a great person that you could look up on the internet, Rav Aaron Lupiansky. Rav Aaron Lupiansky is really a great resource of deep intellect, a deep understanding of Jewish thought. His greatness is that he can present complex ideas in a very simple fashion. And it's really brilliant. So if you want to listen to great podcasts, you just Google Lupiansky, Aaron Lupiansky. There probably won't be too much competition for that last name. It's not like Cohn. And it's well worth listening to. So he has a piece on where he goes through a number of questions that we've all heard, but the way that he ties it together is quite amazing. So one of them is, of course, that we know that the holiday that's upon us is the holiday of Purim. And whenever you say the word Purim, of course, you are awakened to the similarity between the word Purim and what we call Yom HaKippurim. Yom HaKippurim, right, it translates very simply, Kippurim. If you just read it fast, it's a day like Purim, right? Yom HaKippurim is the day that is like Purim. And that is a very strange thing, because there are probably very few days that have such a great contrast between Purim and Yom Kippur. Right, Yom Kippur, of course, we are fasting, right? And on Purim, we are feasting, right? By the law of the day, the days themselves are quite a contrast. So what is the relationship? You're saying Purim is, Yom Kippur is like Purim. What's the relationship between them at all? And then to take it a step further, if you say something is like it, so you have an original, then you say this is like that. So you're saying, so Purim is the main, what seems to be have a main thing, and Yom Kippur is secondary. It's Kippurim, it's like Purim. So what does that mean? What are we saying? What is this idea of the 2 days? What's the relationship between the 2 days at all? It's very appropriate that, Robert, that you're making today's feed that we're eating, you know, it's much better to give this talk when you're Kippurim, right? Right, when you're like Purim, right? Purim we feast, so it's appropriate that today you're giving the great feast. And it's a good, and there's a little scotch on the table too, so it's okay. Okay. So if you look at the name Purim, this is also this is probably one of the strangest things. What is we call the holiday, all of the holidays seem to make sense in terms of their name. No, thank you. I appreciate it. I only do apple juice.
Okay.
I appreciate it though.
You're welcome.
Somebody has to be able to speak. You guys can sleep. I got this stuff. The holiday, the name Purim, what does the word Pur mean? Right? Right, lot or lottery, right? So if you wanted to make a name through the Megillah, if you wanted to choose a name, right, what would be the name of the holiday that you would choose? I think if we all had to sit and we came up together with a bunch of names, I certainly don't think Purim would rank on the top five. Yeah, lots. That's like you don't even realize, you know, if you ask most people why it's called Purim, no idea. I mean, they don't remember that the word even exists in the Megillah. Right, because he Al Shem HaPur, because he made. Why are they choosing that name? Why did they choose that name for the holiday? It's a very, very strange name, right? And it seems to be inconsequential, meaning it's Haman wanted to destroy the people. Okay, that's not so unique for Jewish history. Except he did it through a lottery, Meaning is to say, okay, he wasn't sure which day to do, so he chose which month to do. So he went through the months, and the month that came up he chose Adar by lottery, and then he went through all of the days of the month, and he came up Yud Gimel. Right, and of course, the Medrash says that he was all excited. He came up Adar, perfect month. Because that's the month that Moshe died. The great Redeemer of Israel. So there's a weakness there, right? There's a weakness inherent in the month, and he wanted to capitalize on that weakness. So what is this with the lotteries? Now, if we look at Yom Kippur also has something like that. Yom Kippur also has lotteries. Where are there lotteries on Yom Kippur? What's the famous lottery of the day of Yom Kippur?
The goat.
So the goat, right? So you have the goat. You have the goat. You have two goats, right? It says they have to be twins in appearance. Not the biological twins, but they have to be twins in appearance. They should be somewhat similar in size, in appearance, in look. And the Kohen Gadol has two lots would be brought in front of him. One said, holy to God. That would be offered as the offering of Yom Kippur. And the second says, Lazazel, right, which would be taken out to the mountain and cast backward off the mountain. Right, and one of the strangest of the biblical services that we have. So there's a lot there. There's a lot there. Where's the relationship? Right. How do we relate with these two ideas, and how do we connect them? Right. There seems to be something important about lotteries. So if Dessler writes an important principle for how we look at the world and the events that occur in the world. And he breaks it into three categories. He says that you have the Olam HaNisi, you have the world of miracles. Right? The world of miracles, right, is that it's an God's open hand of revelation, right? And it's obvious that God is engaged. So for example, right, the most radical one would be the splitting of the sea. Right? In general, the whole Passover Seder is focused on nisim v'niflaos, on open miracles that God did. We go through the 10 plagues, we go through the splitting of the sea, right? Those are miracles, and those are awe-inspiring miracles, the miracles that are attributed, right, to God. Everybody, it's obvious, except for CNN, that it's from God, right? Right? So those are awe-inspiring, right? They are God-inspired. They drive you. The only problem is, though, you can't predict them, right? And they're not duplicable. You can't predict when the miracle is going to happen, right? Moses, but I'm saying we can't predict. You don't know, and you can't duplicate it. So it's very limited. Its inspiration, right, is limited to its time, right? And then you have to draw from it, but you don't know it when it's going to happen. Okay. Then he goes, you have the opposite of that is Olam HaTevi. The world of nature, right? The world of absolute straight nature, right? Which is day in and day out, that the world, the sun rises, the sun sets, right? Oh, the whole world that we live in, that it's, right? That's the world of Teva, of nature. There, you could see God, or you could choose to ignore God entirely. You don't have to see, right? It just happens. This is just the way it is. It's on autopilot. Right, it's on autopilot. You don't have to be. You don't have to see God in it unless you choose to. Then Rav Dessler writes that there is a cross between these two worlds, and that is where you have a happenstance. You have something that happens that almost points you in the direction that there is a divine or conductor that's orchestrating this event. It's natural, but it's serendipitous, right? Meaning it's just all of these things line up just this way. Now you have to choose, right? Divine or nature or luck, right? And that is, of course, the story of Purim, right? When you're reading the Megillah, each event in the Megillah could be looked at. Queens are decapitated every day, right? Right? You know, King Henry, which is the King Henry the Ninth, right? Eighth. The Eighth, okay. Seventh or Eighth?
Eighth.
Eight. Okay, King Henry the Eighth, right? He basically, you know, he was Achashverosh on steroids, right? Okay. He got rid of her every time, right? So you see that it happens, right? You have change in leadership, right? You have change in leadership. People fall out of favor and into favor. Haman, right? So you have all of each piece could be dismissed, right? In the complexity of it, but all of them together paint a picture. And in that picture, you have to decide which one you're seeing. Right? Which one you're going to see. You're going to see miracle, or you're going to see just nature. You're going to see just... And that's the story. That is the essence of the day. Right? That's the essence of the day. It's interesting. Where else do you have in the Torah lottery? Where else do you have in the Torah a lottery? Does anybody remember? Where else do you have in the Torah a lottery? There's another lottery in the Torah.
Going into Israel.
Right. So when the Jewish people were going into Israel, so the division of the land was very, very strange. We're taught that the division of the land, every piece of land was divided twice. One was through a lottery, and one was through the Urim V'Tumim. One was through the Choshen, through the breastplate of the Kohen, and the divine message that would light up on the breastplate. Right? That was the first smartphone, right? But the first computer, right? It would light up, right? It's like, what do you need both for? If you're gonna have the light show, so what do you need the lottery for? And if you're gonna have the lottery, so what do you need the light show? I mean, what's the two of them coming? So the idea of these two is because Am Yisrael is going from an Olam HaNisi to Olam HaTeva, TV. They're going from a world of absolute miracle, an existence that's miraculous. Manna falls from heaven, right? Everything about their existence in the desert was miraculous.
No dry cleaners.
No dry cleaners, right? Everything was miraculous in nature. They're going into the land of Israel, where everything is going to be tivi. It's going to be natural, right? That's how, right, Eretz Yisrael is going to be natural. They're going to plant. It needs to rain, and the crops need to grow, and you need to harvest it, right? Everything is going to be Olam HaTeva. Even when they went up to Jerusalem, they had to go up to Jerusalem three times a year. They had to go up, make their way, right? They weren't going by pillars of cloud. They weren't going by bullet cloud, right? They had to go, they had to travel, right? In fact, they had to walk some of it. It had to be physically with their own feet. They had to walk up the mountain, right? They actually went up to Jerusalem. The last stretch had to be done by foot. So they were going from one to the other, and therefore, that's the lottery. A lottery represents, right, natural. Right, natural. The breastplate obviously represents miraculous, right? It's fusing the two together. What's going to be your responsibility is to see God in the realm of the nature, of the natural, right? And you have to bring the divine into the natural, right? Because that's what the goal, right? That's how a Jew ideals, and a Jew's ideal life is not Eliyahu Bahara Carmel. It's not Elijah on Mount Carmel, right? Elijah, right, if you remember the story, right, that the Jewish people were waffling back between the God of Baal and between Hashem Yisbarach, between God and this Baal, this deity Baal, right, that was popular during the day. And they were waffling back and forth between the two. So, Eliyahu says, until when will you dance at two weddings? Right? That's what he said. He said, so when will you dance at two weddings? Either go that way or go that way. So it says he did a whole sound and light show. He brought fire from heaven, a whole show. Right? He interfered in the natural order. He made a second Sinai, if you will. He made it just a total miracle. Right? But it was an intervention. Right? But what was its duration? Very limited. It was a very limited duration. And in fact, how does it end? How does that story end? Everybody screams out, and all of the Jewish people screamed out, Hashem Elokim, Hashem Elokim, Hashem is the true God, Hashem is the true God. Right, now it's interesting. What? How do we end Yom Kippur? Right, what's the last thing we do on Yom Kippur? Before we blow the shofar? Right, we end with Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim. Oh, that's so inspiring. It's so inspiring when you say the Shema, you say the Baruch Shem out loud three times, then Hashem Elokim seven times. You're on a high. Your mom is flying. You're expecting the shofar of Mashiach, right? Or at least the shofar that's going to tell you you could eat, right? Right. You're all excited, right? Hashem Elokim. It's very, very inspiring. What's that last message? What's the message of Hashem Elokim? You know what the real message is? Why do we end like that? So everybody thinks because it's such a high. Because it's Tanakh, they said Hashem Elokim. The message, the real message that's telling you is that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. Yom Kippur is over. Yom Kippur is over. I'll give you a good story, a true story. One of my early Yom Kippurs, when I was here, so I officiated Yom Kippur's mamash. It was a great Yom Kippur, very, very. So I was at the bank a little bit after Yom Kippur, 2-3 days later. Somebody tells me, Rabbi, this was your best Yom Kippur yet, right? I'll see you next Yom Kippur. Now, he meant it with sincerity. He meant it. He was giving me a compliment, right? But that was like the biggest compliment slap that Hashem Elokim, right? Look at Eliyahu and Har Carmel. If you look that verse, what happens the next day? It had no impact. It had no impact. Leo brought fire from heaven. Zevel, I don't want to go over the whole story, but if you look over there on the next page, right, the Zevel said, I'm going to kill Leo tomorrow. Right, I'll share with you. It says, right, Izevel, Elio was being pursued by the king. So the next day, Izevel says, I'm going to kill you tomorrow. It's a strange thing. If you're going to kill somebody, usually you don't tell them you're going to kill them. And if you're going to do it, you don't wait till tomorrow. I mean, you kill them now, you don't wait till tomorrow. I'm going to kill you tomorrow. It's a very strange statement. So what she was saying is Elio, you're on a high now. Tomorrow will have no impact. People will forget. They won't remember it.
Why tomorrow? They don't want to stay for Maru, bro. Tomorrow's another day.
You know what the Christians say is that miracles never converted anyone.
Right. So that's the idea. So the Yom Kippur. Right. Yom Kippur. Right. If you look at Yom Kippur, right. Yom Kippur is a day. Right, that we're supposed to. Yom Kippur is a day. What's our connection with Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur is a day of awe. It's a day of inspiration. It's a day. It's an otherworldly. We take on an angelic. Existence for a day. Right, and that's what Yom Kippur is about. Yom Kippur, right? And that's what it is. Right, we don't eat just like angels don't eat. We dress in white like Malachim. The idea of a kittel. Some even have a minhag of standing much of the day, right? Like angels stand, right? We take on a whole otherworldly experience. But at the end, what happens? At the end, you don't extend Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur has to end, right? It's not meant to go on to another day, right? Purim, on the other hand, right? How do we, if we have to be finding God? So Yom Kippur, we find God. Right, that's the whole idea. Dishu Hashem behimatzo. Find God when He's approachable. We find God through an angelic approach. Purim is the opposite. Purim is the opposite. We're finding God. The whole story is a story of finding God in the darkness. It's finding God in nature. It's finding God in chance. Right, and everything is, and that's why if you look in the story of Purim, right, everything. Right, is just the opposite. It's all vinahapach. Right, it's all just the opposite. Whatever was one way became the other way. Right, meaning Vashti is the pose which brought about, right, Haman's ascension, but it also brought about, right, Esther's appointment. Right, the gallows that Haman built, right? The very same gallows had to be the gallows that Mordechai he built for Mordechai to hang. Mordechai was the very same gallows that he himself was hung on, right? The very writers that you're going to see in the Megillah, very strange. It says that the riders went out. It says that Haman pushed the riders out to get the decree out right away. The Megillah, four chapters later, when Esther writes the letter, Mordechai and Esther write the letter, it says, and the riders were pushed, the very riders were pushed out the day that, wait a minute, they came back with the old, right, they pushed out. The same riders, who cares? Is that whether it happened that way? Who cares? Right. Whenever you have something recorded in the Megillah, in a biblical text, you always have to ask yourself, why is this important? Right. There's no extraneous information. The answer is that that's the whole story. Everything that was one, the very same thing, is the opposite. This is the exact opposite. Like the wine, the mishte of Haman, the party of Haman became the party of our salvation. Everything was upside down, right? And that's the idea, is to find Hashem, right, in what seems to be seemingly mundane things, right? And that answers, right, why is it that we call the holiday Purim? Why do you call lot? Because there's nothing that we would attribute to chance more than lottery, right? It's a 50-50. That's a 50-50. But the answer is, right, that we're seeing that God is in the 50-50. Right, Hashem is in the 50th. That's what we're looking for, right? Is to take, and that's right, we know we have there's a minig of masks on Purim, right? This is because you have to look. What's a mask? A mask is covering that which is that it's something beneath. You have to pick it up to see what's really there. That's the essence of Purim. Purim is always picking up the mask to see God from behind the other side. And that explains why is it Purim is the main and Yom Kippurim is a day like Purim. Because which is the higher, right? The higher, says the Ramban, right? We want to see God in nature, right? Miracle is easy to see God, right? That's easy. Anybody could see God in miracle, right? But in nature, that you have to look. You have to focus. You have to see Hashem in nature. What's the difference? Because miracle... right, after a few days, tomorrow I'll kill you. Tomorrow, yeah. You don't remember. Whereas nature is every moment you're seeing Hashem. Right? And that's interesting. There's a very, very, very interesting idea. What bracha? There's only one blessing that we make in the entirety of our blessings that we speak of God's heavenly throne. Right? Of God's heavenly throne. So if I would ask you, what blessing would we say that speaks of God's heavenly throne? I think we should say it on Yom Kippur when we're standing shofar, when we're speaking of God's heavenly throne, right? The high holidays, I mean, that's it. Maybe in the sukkah, right? When we're sitting in God's house, right? What's the only bracha that we say that speaks of God's throne? The restroom, Asher Yotza. Asher Yotza, the restroom blessing, right? Our body works. I could stand before God's heavenly throne, honorable throne. Right? The answer is because there's nothing more natural than going to the restrooms. There's nothing more earthly and natural than going to the restrooms. But that's the Jew. The Jew is seeing in the restroom, in the fact that my body works, in the most natural, automatic, right? Pilot, right? At least you pray it's automatic. Right? In the most natural, automatic system, that's where we're finding God. That's where the Jew finds God, right? Is in that, and that's it, because that is sustaining. That's the ideal, is to be able to find the Kaddish Baruch Hu in that. When they went into Eretz Yisrael, all of the mitzvot atuliot baritz, all of the commandments that are part of Eretz Yisrael, is to bring the divine into the natural. Right, because the natural, the produce that grows, the animals that are born, all of these gifts that we give is all to bring God into the natural. And Rav Huttner says, right, he once said, that's why if you look at the holiday of Purim, right, why is there no Havdalah at the end of Purim? right? End of Shabbos, we make Havdalah. The end of the holidays, we make Havdalah. Why is there no Havdalah at the end of Purim? So he says it beautifully. He says, because the idea of Purim is, it doesn't end. That's the whole idea of Purim.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to end, right? He says, you're supposed to see God in the nature, right? That's what it is. And therefore, he says, no, it awakens you, but then that message has to stay with you for the rest of the year.
Yes,
everybody stay put in the cottage. And of course, the brother of Robert. Is he
again, Robert? Akiva ben Chazon Yehuda.
Give me a hand.